You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?
Vices? We don't need no vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
Not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you can find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows, like the Multiverse Fancast, which definitely still exists, and MF Uncensored. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul, and with me via the Zoom studio is the guy who just said that he keeps the entire show going, Sean. Sean, how are you today?
I'm just wonderful. I stand by my statement.
Yep, so starting with this episode, all the editing, promotion, and everything's going to be done by Sean, and you guys let me know.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. What's the name of the editing software I use?
Edidroid.
Did you just make that up?
No, Edidroid's a real thing. It's a Lucasfilm.
All right, I'll take your word for it, but no, that's not what we use, but okay. You're so handsome. You're so handsome.
I know.
Anywho, as always, thank you guys for listening, and a happy holiday season for all you guys. At time of release, it is the day after Christmas.
Oh, Christmas was awesome.
Christmas was awesome. It was a Christmas miracle. We don't know. It's not Christmas yet. We're actually recording beforehand. Whoa, it's like time travel.
And seriously, it's like, you know, can we guess what the lottery numbers are in a couple of days?
I think the drawing's tonight.
Saturday. Yeah, Saturday. So it's like 600 mil.
I know, right? I don't get out of bed for less than 700.
Oh, God. I mean, Jesus. You know, why even bother if you're going to win $500 million?
After taxes.
Yeah. In the state of New York, that'll be gone in a week.
That's like a month of mortgage and and heating costs. Now, we just bought $30 worth of Duraflames just so we could save on the heating bill.
Well, we got a little plug-in heater that we'll use instead of turning on the actual heat.
Yep. Merry Christmas, everyone. Anywho, so we thought it might be fun to do an episode that does have some Christmas motif to it, because in the original adaptation, the stage adaptation, that it takes place all on Christmas Eve.
That is correct.
And I will say that it is the more realistic option that they changed it for the film, and that is the 2005 release of Rent, the movie, not the musical.
No, the movie of the musical.
But
Yeah.
This is a long time ago. I don't want to talk about it.
18 years ago. Holy mother of God.
Oh, God.
That's crazy.
I can't talk about that. I feel like that movie was like, it's weird. Like, Sean and I were talking about this movie before we actually started recording, and I didn't realize that it didn't do well at the box office at the time, but I feel like everybody was talking about it when it came out.
Yeah, I mean, the show was still extremely popular, playing on Broadway. I mean, I think it'd been on Broadway for not 10 years yet, but it had been on for a significant amount of time. And I'm still shocked to the day that this movie did not do well. Now, am I expecting, like, blockbuster numbers? No, but, like, at least make your budget back. At least make a significant amount beyond what your budget was. It was very surprising.
Especially now, it was a November release. Like, there wasn't much else going on.
Yeah, I mean, November of 2005. It's not like we didn't even have a Harry Potter movie that year, or did we? Maybe we did. That might have been Goblet of Fire. So maybe that was another reason why it didn't make a lot of money. I don't know. But yeah, I can't explain it. I personally really enjoy this movie. I think it's very well done. Is it perfect? No. You know, we'll get into it a little more as we go on. You know, maybe what we think could have been done better. But you and I have differing opinions between, because I know, like, when the movie came out, you were big on the movie soundtrack, but I was still big on listening to the actual Broadway version. And because there are many differences.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the way there's a lot of stuff that was cut out of the show to obviously fit into the movie and make the movie seem, you know, more realistic. So, but that's always happens between adapting a Broadway show into a movie. It's very rare you go straight from a show to the movie and there's no changes.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but the play, the musical of Rent, is it's a rock opera and most of the dialogue is sung.
Yes, it's very rare you get like an actual just talking. It's like a lot of it is you're talking to music, so it's done and yeah, very rock opera.
Yeah, like
the movie doesn't do that.
I've heard the original soundtrack. Like I've listened to both because I am an equal opportunity music listener to guy. In my head, sure. It sounded way better.
Sure.
But same thing when Sweeney Todd came out. Like I wanted to hear the original, and the original music is fantastic for Sweeney Todd. It's totally different beasts, though. A Broadway show script and a movie script are very different. That's why, like, when Hamilton was rolling around, they just filmed the actual, and they did that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, that was a big thing. I remember watching a lot of, like I remember watching, like, Peter Pan. Like, I had, like, a video
of
Peter
Pan. Oh, God, yeah, the old Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Sweeney Todd did it, the original, Angela Lansbury. They did it. There's a film version of the original.
I watched it.
Broadway Sweeney Todd that pops up every now and then on TV, and that's really interesting to watch. As you said, Peter Pan.
I watched it on
Hamilton.
YouTube. Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't shock me if eventually Lin-Manuel Miranda does do a film version of Hamilton, but I just feel like that's something you just don't touch.
Right.
I think that's something that is just so unbelievable to see live on stage that I feel like a movie version of it would just kind of
take away from it.
And you could honestly say the same thing about Rent. I don't agree with that statement, but there is a... You didn't see the show, right? You didn't see it.
No, I never saw it.
No? I was lucky enough I got to see it, and it was an experience to watch. I mean, it really was fantastic. So there is like a... What do you call it? Like a feeling of seeing something live, and then when you see the movie version, you're kind of like, it just doesn't land as well as it did, you know, seeing it in person. Mm-hmm. So, it is what it is. Some movies, some shows do better as a movie than they do as a show, and some shows do better as a show than they do as a movie.
Well, I'll even go the opposite. Like Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, they released the book, and there are people that can't read the book, which is hilarious, considering it went book, movie, play, book, and...
Yeah, but I mean,
because it's written like a play.
I fully recommend you see the show. The whole point of the show is I don't think it's the story that's the factor. It's all the effects that they pull off in the show is what makes that amazing.
Well, it was the Spider-Man show. You remember that? Like that whole big production that they
Spider-Man.
Did.
Turn off the dark.
And it was like the show itself wasn't that good, like script wise, but apparently like the effects were fantastic. But many people almost died.
What was that? There was a movie where like someone goes, well, you know what happened in that Spider-Man? Things didn't go right and people died. And they're like, no, they didn't. But I can't remember what movie that was from. And it's going to bother me now.
Oh, yeah.
But no, and we mentioned it right before we started recording. Like this movie came out in 2005 and there was like a rejuvenation of the musical. The film version of musicals because Chicago, well, it started with Moulin Rouge in 2001. That was like an original movie musical that just blew everybody away. Then you get Chicago, which won Academy Awards and was a very, very good movie. And that's the definition of a movie that's better, in my opinion, than the show.
Yeah.
Like I've seen the show live and the show just doesn't do the same as what the movie does. So then you get this, you get the producers, you get Hairspray. You know, and it really kind of Sweeney Todd comes out a couple of years later. And now we're kind of in that lull again where, you know, we're going to get Wicked next year, you know, which I'm not looking forward to at all, but whatever. So I think that's another one where I feel like it's only works on the stage. But
right. It's like, well, it's funny because I actually liked Hairspray. I dug it.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was very, very good.
And this movie I thoroughly enjoy too. I mean, it's like you
I
said,
do too.
It's not without its faults, and you know, there's some questionable choices. And then obviously, you listen to like the movie soundtrack; it's very different compared to the actual Broadway soundtrack. Because what they do is they do a lot more exposition during the songs.
Yeah.
So like the script is still going when the song's happening. So I don't know. It's just and they cut out. They had to cut stuff. You know. I'm sure the Broadway musical is at least 3 hours with intermission.
Probably like 2.5.
Yeah.
Maybe, but the whole in the Broadway show, you have basically the background singers are all portraying, you know, homeless at the homeless people of New York and just random. And there's a lot of stuff where they're singing, you know, like back up, or there's like certain songs that they sing. Obviously, they cut that all out of the movie, because which I understand. I totally get that. It just that would not translate well to film.
Well, it's like Sweeney Todd. You had the ballads of Sweeney Todd that would be played. Yeah. Which
I mean, I remember we saw Sweeney Todd and I was like, I was a little bummed that they cut that out. But I was like, I get it, because it just takes away from the movie. It's literally a play starting with the ghost of Sweeney Todd telling everybody, you know, here comes a interesting story. So I get it. I totally get it.
I do love that.
We definitely have... Go ahead.
I do love the opening ballad to Sweeney Todd. Oh, it's so good.
Dude, I'm telling you, well, it's too late now. They're going to be gone in a couple of weeks, but the show that's in Broadway right now is fantastic. It's so good.
What show? Yeah, no, we never got tickets to it.
Josh Groban, fantastic.
So good. It's too expensive to go to Broadway.
It's not that bad. I mean, you can get decent seats for $100 a ticket. It's not. I mean, if you want to sit like ridiculously close to the stage, yeah, you're going to be paying pretty penny, but you get balcony seats, and I've never had an issue of being blocked in a balcony in a theater. So, but
I'm gonna wear my finest top hat the next time I go to the show.
There you go.
God, I can't see. But anyway,
This movie, you know, we'll get into the cast now, and this movie actually does what a lot of musicals don't do, is they brought in not all, but
like 95%
significant amount of the original actors who portrayed the characters on Broadway. You could argue that that was one of their faults for this movie. You can argue it, just saying, but I mean, literally out of the eight main characters, six of them were original cast members. And the two that are not are Rosario Dawson playing Mimi and Tracy Toms playing Joanne. I don't know why the other two were not brought back. They might have been older than the other actors. That just they just were like, I can't do this. But I actually thought Rosario Dawson did a hell of a job.
Oh, she did a great job, and you know, Mimi, come on, Mimi.
Yeah, and this was before Clerks too. I mean, this was like right before that.
It was after Sin City.
Yes.
So, like, Rosario Dawson, before this came out, so Rent was 2005. Sin City was the same year. Oh, crap.
Obviously, we first saw her in Men in Black 2.
Men in Black 2. No, Sean, we first saw her in Josie and the Pussycats.
Never watched that movie.
Josie, yeah, she was in, let's see. Oh, she was in Down to You with Freddie Prinze Jr. I vaguely remember that movie.
Down to You, I don't remember that one.
It's with Freddie Prinze Jr. and Julia Stiles. Let's see.
Okay.
Back when that was like an award-winning cast, like that was 2000. That's a very 2000 cast right there. Josie and the Pussycats, Men in Black 2 was 2002. The Adventures of Pluto Nash. Oh no. One day, one of our shows will talk about that. And then really nothing like big until Sin City was probably her next biggest one. And then Rent, Clerks 2. Yeah, that's really where she kind of exploded.
Yeah. Good for her. No one knew she could. I didn't, because again, I had not seen Josie and the Pussycats, so I didn't know how she was going to be singing, and she was really good.
Oh, I forgot that she was in Percy Jackson and the Olympians, the Lightning Thief. She played Persephone. Yeah. But yeah, she could. She had some pipes. We were kind of surprised, and she could dance.
Yeah.
So let's go through the main cast. Obviously, we have Anthony Rapp as Mark Cohen. He's a filmmaker. He's Roger's roommate. And Maureen just dumped him for Joanne. And another trope they also take out of this, or another expositional point, is the answering machine.
Well, they have it later on in the movie.
Like once.
Yeah, but that was a big thing in the show. Having his parents or his mom call him. And again, it's like, you know, you're singing to him like, we're sorry, Maureen dumped you.
Yeah. So, I hate to say, like, I like Anthony Rapp, but in all honesty, like, he hasn't done much career-wise. Like, he was big for this.
He's more of a stage. He's been more of a stage actor. I mean, I remember him from Road Trip.
Yeah. He's the bad guy
in Road Trip, and But again, he's been a Broadway. He'd been mostly a stage actor for most of his life. I mean, he really didn't do much in film.
He was in Adventures in Babysitting. That was his first film.
Oh, God.
That's a deep cut. Road Trip, Rent. Yeah, not a whole lot. Some television, too. But I hate to say it, and I'm not trying to be mean, but he is more famous for accusing Kevin Spacey at this point. Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, that was a big thing, too. But anyway, he's fine in it, and obviously he brings his own character to life. I'm curious, like, do you think that having so many of the actors reprise their roles, you mentioned that it wasn't necessarily to the benefit of the film. Do you feel that way about all of them or just some of them?
Again, I usually, if you go back and you look at movies made from Broadway shows, very much of the time you'll cast a big name actor in the movie because obviously it makes sense. A lot of times Broadway actors are lesser known, you know, whatever. And I mean, I remember hearing that when this movie was being cast, they were like, you know, 2005, who do we get for this movie? Like, you know, were they trying to get names? Were they trying to find up and coming singers that could just do the characters? And it just so happened that all these actors were still around and they were coming to check out the set. And they were all, I mean, still fairly young, but I mean, like, they were not as young as they were when they did the show, but. And that's why they all got cast. They all still looked very good, you know, literally. But I think they all do a good job. I can't explain it why, you know, again, why it didn't work. I don't know. I really don't know. It's one of those, I watched this movie numerous times, and I'm like, why did this movie not do well? I don't know.
Going down the list, we have Adam Pascal as Roger. He's an HIV-positive ex-addict rock musician. So each of them have their thing that they're trying to do. They have their defining character thing. I really wish real life worked like that sometimes. Like, obviously, we have friends that have, like, singular interests, but none of them are like, this is my thing. I'm going to do just this thing, and it defines who I am. Like, yes, I have podcast shirts that I walk around with. By the way, a new podcast shirt dropped on misfitfaction.com. Check that out.
Woo!
Yeah, but like, it's not, if somebody starts talking to me like, hey, what are you up to? I'm not going to be like, have you heard about my podcast? That's a terrible way to start a conversation, as said in Family
Guy. What are you talking about, Paul? I saw you on the side of the street the other day with a sign that says, listen to my podcast.
Please. Ask me about my podcast. Yeah, we got to do that movie at some point. But anywho, so.
Add it to the list.
Yep, anywho. So we have Adam Pascal. He plays Roger, and he's fine in it. He's supposed to be like 24 or something like that.
Yeah, again, that's the problem. All these characters are supposed to be in their early 20s, and it's just obvious that they're not.
Rosario.
Yeah, you could say that that's the problem with the casting. You could also say that maybe just casting the same actors that were on stage, it just doesn't translate to the screen as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, again, that's not a knock on them. It's just maybe it just doesn't. It didn't give the movie the juice that it needed. I don't know.
Well, so I can't tell you. I'm not a Hollywood executive.
But I mean, Jesse L. Martin, you know, is next as Tom Collins. And I mean, we knew Jesse L. Martin from Law and Order.
I wasn't a big fan of the original Law and Order. I watched SVU, so I actually am more familiar.
I was into the original Law and Order, and you know, I liked his few years on the show.
I'm more of a fan of him from
the Flash now.
That was where I learned Papa Joe. That's what they call him, Papa Joe. but
he actually took a leave from Law and Order. They literally like shot him in the show, put him in like a coma. And then they cast Michael Imperioli for like a month or two while he was out filming Rent. So I remember that was like a big thing when that happened.
I like him. He's got some pipes. He's got just like...
Oh, he's a great singer. He's a great singer.
I wish they did more with that on The Flash. Like they do a lot with like Grant Gustin and all them. And him and Melissa Benoist like did some songs together. But like to get Jesse L. Martin, like, come on, let him sing, man. And he's
Don't they have that episode where, like, he dreams they're, like, in the 30s or something like that?
Yeah, I don't remember if he sings in it. Because that's the thing also about CW casts. They're all multi-talented, except acting is, like, the lowest part half the time. But they could all sing, dance, and do all these things. Like, it's hilarious watching a CW show at the beginning of it towards then watching it at the end, because they all learn, they all get better.
Yeah.
As much as I love Stephen Amell, he was not good that first season, and I don't know if that was just reflective of the direction or whatever. And that could be another thing. Like, this movie was directed by Chris Columbus, who's no slouch in the directing field.
And it was a shocker that he was chosen to direct the movie. I mean, this is fresh off of the first two Harry Potter movies. Like, he even says, like, I really want he because he talks about how he was in New York City during the 80s, and he, you know, went through a lot of what these young people did, and he loved the show, and he really pitched to Jonathan Larson's family. It's like, trust me, I can do this, and I thought he did a good job. I really did.
I feel like we're gonna keep
first real dramatic kind of feel movie besides, like, you know, Stepmom and argue Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, we will. You should listen to our episode of Mrs. Doubtfire. We argued a lot of different tonal points in that, and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And we're really good at podcasting. Totally. That's what I tell people.
Sure.
But he's, you know, he plays Tom Collins, and this is also this movie is very anti-authority, very anti, like, the establishment, the man, the type, like, that type mentality, and almost everyone has AIDS in it. So, just as they said in the off-Broadway production of Lease from Team America, everyone has AIDS. Like, that's a big part of this movie, because it takes place in from 1989 to 1990.
Yeah, this is right during the major
AIDS
crisis that was happening in the cities.
And so he's an openly gay man, and that's how he got AIDS. And we find out that Roger got it from being an addict and sharing needles. So
Mimi as well.
Yeah. So I do like Tom Collins in this. I really do. Like, the whole point of him is just, like, you know, screw the establishment. I hate you all, but I'm awesome. And yeah. Some of his musical numbers are my favorites.
The one thing I will say that the movie did better than the show. In the show, it is Tom Collins and Angel. Like, their love story drives the show.
Right.
In the movie, I think it's still very high point, but I think the Roger and Mimi love story kind of took off a little more in the movie than it did in the show. And I think that relationship a little outshines the Angel and Tom Collins relationship in the movie version.
All right, I'm going to be a little controversial. Mm-hmm. That is purely a Hollywood direction. And not that I agree with it under any circumstances, but especially in the early 2000s, there were still a lot of stereotypes that people who went to see theater were a little bit more open-minded and stuff like that. People who went to the movies wanted characters that they could more closely, quote-unquote, relate to. And, you know, they're
it's like, still not, it's not like they hit it. It's still there.
But I can definitely see.
I don't feel like they shrunk it. I feel like they overdid the Mimi and Roger relationship. Not badly, but they definitely.
What I'm saying, though, is that was definitely either a test audience reaction, or it was a Hollywood decision. Like, you don't watch The Boys.
No, I don't.
Oh, you got to watch The Boys, because, like, they show all, like, the Hollywood.
You keep telling me this.
You got to watch it.
I guarantee you. I know. It's like every other episode, you're like, do you watch The Boys? And I'm like, no, I've told you this numerous times. I don't watch. I haven't watched it. It's just funny.
I'm going to keep annoying you about it. But anyway,
that's fine.
They have a whole bit when they're making the managing of the talent behind the scenes, and it's like, holy crap, I'm sure Hollywood is exactly like this. But anywho,
sorry, real quick. I just read here on Wikipedia that the original Mimi in the show, Daphne Rubin Vega, was pregnant at the time of the movie's casting and filming, and that's why she didn't do the movie. And then the original Joanne was significantly older than the rest of the cast back when the show came out, so she was like, I can't do this.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, thank
you. All right, now we found out through our very reliable Wikipedia source.
I trust that. I believe it. It makes sense.
We didn't even mention Rosario Dawson as Mimi. Let's talk
about
her.
We talked about her.
Yeah, well, she plays the neighbor underneath them who, you know, gets in. It's all interested in Roger. I will say that making this movie, because the play takes place over one night. It is Christmas Eve or
Christmas Eve.
Yep, into Christmas Day. And the movie decides to go from Christmas Eve of 89 to almost like New Year's of 90. Like, it goes for a full year. Yeah.
The show doesn't only take place on Christmas Eve. Like, the first half of the show takes place on Christmas Eve, and then the second half, I think, takes place in within a, you know, a same amount of time. But I think that first half of the show is like only Christmas Eve.
And one of the things that they're able to do with the movie is montage, and they do a montage of the time passing. And it's you know, you see Collins taking care of Angel as you know, as they're getting progressively sicker. And you see like Mimi's in full withdrawal, like in the bathtub, and he's like holding on to her. Like, they show some of the darker sides of that stuff, but they're able to also show how much time is passing and how much like bond these people are creating. So I think that that's one thing that they do better in the movie. Let's see. We have Wilson Jeremy Herdea as Angel.
Oh, yeah.
Did I get that right? Did I get that right?
Wilson Jermaine, I think it's Heredia.
Heredia. Damn it. But I will say I do love the song Today for You, Tomorrow for Me. That's just such a fun
song.
He kills a dog. And like, it's, I can't.
Akita. Avita,
yeah, and the best callback is during Bohemian Rhapsody, and we'll talk about the music and some of our
not Bohemian Rhapsody, but I'll give it
oh
to
no,
you.
Damn it! What did La Vie Bohème? Holy crap! Hey, you know what? It is a Bohemian Rhapsody. Thank you very much.
Oh god, that was great.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed that. Thank you. You're welcome. And Sean's gonna edit now, so he's not gonna take that out.
I'm good. Wilson Jermaine Heredia was, I think, stole the show. That, you know, when it first came out, he was like the breakout star. I think he's the only one that won a Tony for his performance. And, you know, he is that character. Like, there's certain characters that you can't possibly see anyone else portray.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that character is him. He is that character. He was perfect casting and, you know, just absolutely continues to kill it in the movie. I think he's so good.
And he's another one that like you don't see too much of, like.
No, again, I think a lot of them were stage, or, you know, I knew Adam Pascal was not even an actor before he did Brent. He was a singer in band. So like, I don't know if that's what he continued on doing after even being in Rent, but honestly, like Jesse L. Martin, at the time of the movie of this movie, Jesse L. Martin was probably the biggest name, actor. But then obviously now next. Mm-hmm. We have a certain lady named Idina Menzel, who in the last 18 years has become like a god to many people.
Just let it go, Sean. Well, so it's funny. She popped up on Glee. She played Rachel's mom. And it was you know, perfect casting. They look exactly alike. Like, they can both sing. So I remember seeing her on there. And,
And then she's the original Elphaba in Wicked, which was her, you know, that put her into superstardom in the theater community. And then she, you would see her pop up in movies, some TV, as you just said, in Glee. I think she was in, what's the Amy Adams Disney movie?
Oh, it just popped up too.
Enchanted.
That's a good one.
Yeah. She was in that. So she's been around, and then, you know, she gets cast as the character of Elsa in Frozen. And it just propels her into superstardom.
Because film-wise, she has not been in a lot. After Rent, she's done like a couple of small things. She was in Beowulf, really? That's funny.
Beowulf.
Yeah, but yeah, Frozen was the big one. Like, she plays Elsa, and yeah, like Frozen. That's all she really needed. Like, it's wild.
That's all she needs. I mean, it's crazy. And, you know, she really, that's what she's built it on, and she's deserved it. She's one of the greatest singers ever.
Oh, yeah, she's fantastic.
She's a god in the theater community. She doesn't look down on, you know, her, like, the, you know, Wicked or Rent. I mean, she owes her career to those two. I think she was in Uncut Gems. Was it Uncut Gems she was in, the Adam Sandler movie?
Maybe.
But she, I mean, literally since this movie came out, she has become worldwide, you know, recognized and stuff like that.
We have Tracy Thomas as Joanne, who plays the girl that Maureen left Mark for.
Fun fact, she tried out for the show numerous times and was denied.
That's funny.
And then she gets the movie.
That's really fun. That's almost
she's fantastic too. She's got a great voice.
That's right up there with Ernie Hudson telling us the story about how he tried out for Ghostbusters the TV show and they wouldn't take him because he didn't sound enough like Winston. Yeah.
But I am Winston.
Yeah. Charlie Chaplin once came in third place in a Charlie Chaplin lookalike contest. That's a true story. That actually happened. See, Cinematic Adventures, where we take all the best fun facts.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's fantastic. I really like the Tango Maureen, the two of them. Apparently, the throwing of the jackets was something that they would do for like fun during rehearsals, and Chris Columbus liked it so much that he had them do it then.
Well, that's another. The Tango Maureen scene, the movie added the whole, like, you know, in his head moment where, you know, he's actually tangoing with a bunch of people and Maureen.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good addition. I like that. I thought that was good.
And that song also almost gave the movie an R rating because they dropped the F-bomb in it twice. So they had to argue to the MPAA that it was like, context. It's because, so in movies, you're allowed to use the F-word. PG-13 movies get one F-bomb. And then it depends on the context too. Usually it's some sort of exaggeration of something funny. But some movies are able to convince otherwise why they use it.
Yeah.
Like
Chris Columbus had to be like, you're going to alienate a huge amount of fans of this movie that are not going to be able to see it.
By changing some of the lyrics.
Yes, the song. I mean, you can't do that.
Like
even the strip club scene had to be cut a little, just a little, to not get an R rating.
Yeah. What was it? The Social Network had to fight for two F-bombs being dropped.
Mm.
So, like, it's not unheard of, and it happens, but, you know, like, Marvel just had their first F-bomb in a movie with Guardians, which is still really funny. Just open the fucking door! Anyway, so she's great in it. She's not in it nearly as much. Like,
she's the lesser character. Like, she's in it, like, no, she's not as big as the other characters, but the time she's in it, she steals it. She shines.
Yeah, she's good. And then we have Taye Diggs as Benny, who was the landlord of the building, and Mary's wealthy, buys the building that he used to live in with Collins, Roger, Maureen, and Mark. And, you know, he turns into a snob.
Yeah, he does. Taye Diggs plays him great.
You know what sucks, though? Like, he was ready to he bought the building and he was going to renovate it, create studios for them to work in and to live in. And they were like, you're a terrible person. He's like, what? Like, don't get me wrong. He's kicking all those people out of their houses. I get it. I do. But also, they haven't paid their rents. That's the whole point of the title. Like, they owe him rents. That's the first opening song
It's the whole squatter thing that was going on back then. I mean, that was huge. Like, all the vacant buildings in New York City that were happening in that time in the East Side. And it was crazy going on what was going on back then.
But I like how he's like, quote unquote, the bad guy of it. But like, he's like,
yeah,
I'm going to do these great things and you guys can come with me. And they're like, no, we stand by.
He doesn't help himself. He's all, he's a dick.
Yeah.
You know, he's like not the greatest. He's not that kind. And, you know. As you've said, he becomes, you know, obsessed with money. That's basically.
So does he and Mimi have a thing?
They talk about it during La Boheme, like they must have had a fling or something like that, like months before the show starts. But that's about it. And then she's with him after Angel dies for like a hot second.
Yeah, but does that mean that's like, really does it. He divorce his wife?
I don't know. They never really dive too deep into that one. Yeah. They really don't.
Really weird. But so we'll go through the plot very briefly. Basically, all of these people come together, and the movie is just the story of these eight people. And for the most part, like, each character has their arc. So Mark eventually sells footage, and he works for a show called Buzzline or something like that. And then he decides, this isn't what I want to do, so I quit, and I'm going to make my own film. Roger falls in love with Mimi, and the two of them eventually do split up because she's still using. And
he's been just trying to write this one song throughout the whole.
Is it just me, or is that song at the end, Your Eyes, just such a letdown compared to One Song Glory?
Well, yeah, I mean, One Song Glory is like one of the best songs ever written, in my opinion. I love that song.
That song was like, Your Eyes was so lame. And it like brings her out of her death stupor. And she's like, I was in heaven, but I heard your song and Angel told me to come. I'm like, that song wouldn't have done it, lady. You wouldn't need that song. You need that song, a defibrillator and a shot of adrenaline. But anywho, I digress, because Roger is actually my favorite character of the story. But yeah, it's just, I can't, that last part. Mimi stops, doesn't stop using drugs? I don't know. We don't really know what happens with her. But they get back together at the end, so it's nice. Angel does die, and that's a big catalyst for the second half of the movie. And they do watch a film in Angel's honor at the end when they're singing No Day But Today. Or the finale be. Collins doesn't get his job back, but he does manage to reprogram an ATM machine so that when you type in the code ANGEL, you get money from it, which is awesome. Do Maureen and Joanne get back together?
Yeah, I don't know if they're together, but they're on speaking terms at the end. So, like, because they're the ones that find Mimi, you know,
That's right.
Almost dead.
Yeah.
And then he does his little movie at the end there, and you don't see Benny at all. I mean, I know in the show he's at Angel's funeral, as well in the movie, and then the movie you hear the voicemail where he sends to like Mark or Roger that he hasn't seen Mimi for like a couple weeks and he's worried. But after that, you don't see him again.
Right. So, I mean, like the movie ends on like a pretty upbeat note.
Yeah, and that's the you know, that's the ending's a little unbelievable, but yeah, it's the one I guess negative about the show to me was the ending. But,
yeah.
Okay.
All right. So yeah. Since we're getting towards the end, favorite songs from I'll give you my top five. All right, in no particular order. I love One Song Glory. I'm just looking at the track list. One Song Glory, Another Day, La Vie Boheme, obviously. And I'll count La Vie Boheme and La Vie Boheme B as one song.
It's the same song.
Let's see. I do like Today For You, and I'll go with the title Rent.
Yeah. Rent is, I think it's the best song of the show. I mean, literally, you're not even a minute into the show, and then boom, that song just kicks in and it just shoots adrenaline through your body. And I don't think you ever fully come down from that adrenaline high during the whole show. And I think that's why that song is so fantastic. So that's my favorite song of the show. One Song Glory is number two, La Vie Boheme number three, Seasons of Love number four. And I probably would go, they're all good, but I'd probably gotta go I'll Cover You. Because I just think that's a fantastic song.
Yeah. You know what song I just don't care for in this film, and probably if it's in the show also, Over the Moon.
Over the Moon it's not my favorite, but that's why I like it. It's so, you know, just obwash. Like, it makes no sense, but that's just what her character does. Her, you know, like her performance theater is just that random. So it's definitely a song you're kind of like, I don't get, this song doesn't mean anything. It has nothing to do with the plot. It's just, you know, except for the little nods to Benny or something like that. But it's just still very good. Just not one of my go-tos.
I'm with you.
Santa Fe is another good one. I mean, they're all good. Yeah. I don't think there's one bad song in this show.
Yeah, like I said, Over the Moon's really just the only one that I'm like, whatever. But Star City rating for...
I give this movie a 3.5.
I think I can get behind that, Sean.
You know, it's not perfect. I think it's well made. I can't put my finger on what I feel like is missing. There's a part of me that says they should have made it bigger. They should have, you know, maybe cast more well-known actors in it to like really rejuvenate it and, you know, start fresh. But then I'm like, that's not the show. The show is those actors. They are what brought Rent to the stage. And, you know, to have them sing those songs again was great. You obviously add in Rosario Dawson and Tracy Toms, who do very, very good. So it's just kind of like, you work with what you got. I thought Chris Columbus did a good job directing it. It's well made. It's got that very grainy 80s feel to it. It's not, over the top, look to it. I don't know where everybody was that didn't go see this movie, because there's a million Rent fans out there. There are people who would go day after day to see the show. So I don't know why the movie that no one went to go see it.
We'll never know. But that's going to wrap us up. We do have our Fan Feedback Friday. And this week, what are your holiday movie choices this year? Sean, what's your go-to holiday movie choice this year?
Oh, The Usuals, Miracle on 34th Street, Muppet Christmas Carol, Rudolph, and probably White Christmas are like my go-tos.
We just watched Spirited with Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds, and it was surprisingly
It's a Christmas
good.
Carol, right?
Yeah, but it's like, it's almost a sequel to Christmas Carol. Like, it shows that after Ebenezer Scrooge, they also did, like, these ghosts did this to thousands, if not millions of other, people. And it's really interesting, especially there's a little twist to it that you find out in the middle, and it's pretty good. But and the two of them, surprisingly, not only do they have great chemistry, but they can both sing. So that was a plus. Let's see. So that we just watched. But let's see. Also, Paul Blart Mall Cop. That's a Christmas movie, just so you know.
Yeah, okay.
Do you know what else is a Christmas movie that we've never talked about but we love? Just Friends.
Yeah, that's
He's
right.
Home for Christmas. That's
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah. So next year when we're thinking about Christmas movies, there we go. Let's see. Some of the ones that we have, our good friend Brendan.
I swear.
I know, right? Muppet Christmas Carol, Violent Night, The Holiday, of course. We got from
Ron. The Holiday is a good one, yeah.
From Ronnie, the Nightmare Before Christmas, Elf, Home Alone, and the Santa Claus. Shocking. And from our friend Evie, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. You can't not watch
Christmas
it.
Vacation is a classic. We haven't watched that one yet. We're probably going to watch a few movies tonight and then maybe watch one tomorrow before we go out. But it's just, we don't have the time. That's the thing. It's getting in front of the TV and sitting down and watching, an hour and a half, sometimes a longer movie. It's a struggle.
Yeah, I'm with
but
you.
Muppet Christmas Carol, Christmas Eve, that's our go-to. That's what we're going to be watching tomorrow night before, going to bed.
I support that, Sean. But that is going to wrap us up. We do hope everybody had a safe and happy holiday season. We have more content coming, hopefully, in the new year, because obviously Sean is the heart of the entire network. And shows don't happen without him, as he told me. So that's that. Yeah, solo podcasting starting 2024. Anywho.
All right, I'll take the reins. It's okay.
Yeah. Oh, for Christmas, reins.
Numbers are going to go all the way up now.
All the way up to the triple digits. Anyway, that's going to wrap
I'll us up. I'll convince Melanie to come onto the podcast.
Oh, good luck. That's going to wrap us up for today. As always, I'm Paul.
I'm Sean.
And we'll see you guys next time.